Dalad Sivan, Friday the 25th of May. Dr. Sholem Springer, appointment with Infinity.
Good morning to you all. There is a story of the Ponibicharov who gave a drosha somewhere, and it was obviously a very good drosha. Next day he went to a very nearby town and was thinking that he'll give the same one. And what happens is he looks out and there are some people that were there at the drosha yesterday, and he thinks very, very quickly, being the Ponibicharov, he could do this. He decided to switch to another drosha, so he gave this other drosha. Anyway, after the shear, these people came up to him and said, Ponibicharov, we were so hoping to hear the shear again. Now, why do I tell you this? I tell you this because, actually, the shear I'm going to give today, I have given a very, very similar shear 2 years ago at the Torah Way in Manchester. And Rabbi Yehuda here was at that shear. I'm going to say, thank you. Well, you're going to hear it again. Okay, because I'm not the Ponibicharov, so I'm not changing. Oh, I'm sure, right. So, our title is Appointment with Infinity. Now, it's a shear from Rabbi Dessler, Zichron Levozik, Tzadik Levrocha, and it would be, as Rabbi Dessler is wont to do, a shear with great insight and some philosophical content to it as well. Now, it's well known that the Torah was, of course, given twice. Once, so to speak, at Har Sinai. When I say so to speak, I mean because actually the Luchos came down 40 days later on Shivos Batamas. We were not zoicha to hold on to those Luchos, and they were broken. And the Torah was therefore given again some 80 days after that, which is on Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, Moshe Rabbeinu brought the Luchos Shneois. So really we had two sessions of the giving of the Torah. Now, that's just a bit of historical interest, which we'll come back to a little later on. In the language of the Baalei Hashkofa, like, for example, the Maharal, and indeed Rabbi Dessler, and others, the Torah is called Seichel Eloki. It is, so to speak, the mind of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That is the Torah. And we know that the Ribbono Shel Olam is, of course, infinite. That means we cannot know anything about the Ribbono Shel Olam because we are finite and he is infinite. And therefore even Moshe Rabbeinu, who asked Ribbono Shel Olam, Hodieni Noas Drochecha, Hodieni Noas Foidecha, and the Mephoshim explained there that what Moshe Rabbeinu was asking for was an insight into the essence of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And on a lower level, just how the Ribbono Shel Olam operates his world, what is the system. And we all know the answer. The answer was, Lo Yirani Odom Vochai. That, in our language, means, Lo Yirani Odom Vochai, you cannot continue to operate and to be and to live as a human being and know the Tamsis, know what the essence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. They are contradictions in terms. Why? Because a human being works that he has Bechira, he makes moral choices, and when he makes the right choice, then of course he gets a brownie point. And when he makes the wrong choice, he gets whatever the opposite of a brownie point is. Okay, and that's the way we operate in life. And it is essential that we have this option to make good choices and bad choices. Otherwise we wouldn't be human beings. If we could see the essence of the Ribbono Shel Olam, then we would lose our Bechira. We would no longer have it because we'd understand exactly what the right thing to do is. And therefore, we could no longer operate as human beings. So, Lo Yirani Odom Vochai means you cannot continue to be human if you see the Ribbono Shel Olam. So, the answer to Moshe Rabbeinu was effectively no. He did give him some things, but the Mephoshim say most of what Moshe Rabbeinu asked was denied to him. And so, therefore, if the Torah is the Seichel Eloki, is the mind of the Ribbono Shel Olam, then just as the mind of the Ribbono Shel Olam, so to speak, the essence of the Ribbono Shel Olam is infinite, so the Torah is also infinite. Arucha me'eretz midah. It is immeasurable. Immeasurable means that no ruler on earth, no concept, can encompass the infinity of the Torah. And therefore, Rabbi Dessler has a problem, which he expresses in the following way. How can the limited human mind, and we are limited, we are all limited, how can the limited human mind somehow fuse together with the infinite? How does it connect with the infinite, which is Torah? So how can we ever really acquire Torah? That's the problem. The Torah is not comparable to anything. It doesn't have any concept of limitation. The Torah, all parts of it are unlimited, are infinite. And therefore, we cannot compare anything in the Torah with the physical universe. There's no comparison to make. As we say about HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, we can't be hamshilai, we can't have a moshel for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because nothing compares to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's why we don't understand him, because we can't take any mashalim, we can't take a thing in the world and say, well, this is like HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because all our knowledge is built on knowledge that we already have. And therefore, since we haven't got any knowledge of the Ribbono Shel Olam, we can't take anything in the real world and say, this is like HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's nothing Laham Shalai. There's nothing. We can start the process of thought to understand the Ribbono Shel Olam and to compare it to this world. So similarly, the Torah. Since the Torah is a reflection, so to speak, of the Ribbono Shel Olam's mind, even though it might be a slight corner of it, so the fact is, how can a Mugbal, how can we, who are limited and mugbal and bounded, how can we link into the infinite? Let me digress for a moment. We have a very similar sentiment expressed when the Ribbono Shel Olam speaks to Avraham Avinu, and the pasuk says, "Vayotze oiser hachutza." The Ribbono Shel Olam took Avraham Avinu outside. "Vayomer habetno hashemayma." Have a look at the heavens. Gaze upon the heavens. "Usvoya hakoychovim," and count the stars, im tuchal lisvoy oisom, if you are able to count them. There are uncountable thousands, millions of stars out there. And the Mephoshim pick up, indeed Rashi, picks up, why the stars? And Rashi says, Vayotze oisa achutza, lefi pshutoi, haitziu me oholoi lechutz liroi sakachovim. You know, this was a sort of stargazing evening. Took him out of his tent and said, look up at the stars, and this is the marshal for how many your children are going to be. He said to Avraham Avinu, you've got to leave something behind. Because this follows the discussion where Avraham Avinu says, I'm childless. And so Rashi brings the Medrash and says that Ribbono Shel Olam is suggesting to Avraham Avinu, say, mitztagninus shaloch, leave your astrology behind. Leave your astrolabe in your tent and your instruments in your tent. Because you saw written in the stars that you will not have a child, certainly not with sorrow, and therefore as far as you're concerned, that's what it is, that's my destiny, and it's unchangeable. So what Rashi is telling us, and I'll say it in the words of Rav Hirsch, what Rashi is telling us is, I'm going to make a deal with you, Avraham, as he is now. I'll make a deal with you, which is that the only thing in this universe which is unlimited, which has infinite power, infinite mind, infinite thought, the only thing in this world is the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. There is nothing else. Everything else in this universe is all limited. And I'm making you an offer. That you are limited and you see in the stars that this is your destiny, that you're not going to have any children. That is quite true. It is written in the stars. But I can take you above the stars if you leave your astrology behind. Apparently Avraham Avinu, Chazal say, was the greatest astrologer of his generation. So he knew what he was talking about. When he saw in the stars that was written that he was going to have no children, that was his destiny according to the stars. Says the Ribbono Shel Olam to Avraham Avinu, but I can offer you a better deal. I can offer you a different deal. If you will come with me, if you will, so to speak, hitch your wagon to mine, then you can be touched by infinity as well. You can also be infinite, and I will raise you above the stars. Hayipole me Hashem dovo, nothing's impossible for me. You're 100, no problem. Soros 90, no problem. There are no problems anymore. That was the deal that the Ribbono Shel Olam made with Avraham Avinu. And therefore, we have this concept of infinity coming out the whole time. Now Rabbi Dessler says that, of course, the difficulty of connecting with infinity is very real. And he says that actually the final connection that we make with the Torah and indirectly with the Ribbono Shel Olam, that is Begeder Nes. It's a special gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings us. But there is a process that we need to go through in order to bring us very close to this infinity. And he quotes a Gemara, and the Gemara says like this. It says in Pasuk in Chukas, Umi Midbar Matona. They went from the Midbar to a place called Matona. Zog the Gemara. One of the Amoraim say, look, I've searched through all the Masois in Matas Masai, and I've never found a place called Matona. It doesn't exist. So the Gemara says, it's not a place at all. It's Ha'oise Esatzmoik Midbar. The person makes himself like a Midbar. HaTorah nitna b'matana. The Torah is given to him b'matana. And that, says Rav Adesler, is the answer for the route we need to take in order to connect with infinity. We won't get there, but we can get very, very close. We can get as close as we like, but we can't quite get there. The last hop is an S, is a gift. Let me explain it in the following way. If I may take a mathematical example. Let me write up on the board, if I had a board, a simple algebraic expression. 1 over x. 1 divided by x. Yeah, simple looking expression. Now, supposing x was 5, then that fraction makes 1 over 5. If I make x smaller, okay, and make it into 4, then the whole fraction becomes larger. Now, it was a fifth, now it's a quarter. And if I make, so therefore it's bigger. Yeah, I made the whole fraction bigger. Quarter is bigger than a fifth. If I make it half, then this fraction becomes 2. If I make it a tenth, then the fraction becomes 10, etc. The smaller I make x in what we call the denominator, the larger the whole fraction becomes. Yeah, so I can make x very, very, very small. Supposing I make it 1 billionth, then the whole fraction becomes 1 billion, and so on and so on. So mathematicians call this bringing something to its limit. Supposing I make x very, very, very close to zero, then this whole fraction, 1 over x, becomes enormously large. If we could make it zero, it becomes what mathematicians call infinity. So Rav Adesler says, this is the pshat in that Mama Chazan, that Gemara. Umi Midbar Matona. We make ourselves small. The smaller we make ourselves, the larger, so to speak, the whole fraction becomes. And if we could approach zero, we would be approaching infinity. Now, of course, we can't actually make ourselves zero, but we can get very close. And get as close as we can, and Moshe Rabbeinu managed it. Moshe Rabbeinu negated himself so that he became very close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He reached or approached the infinite state. And that last little hop is given to us, Benes, by the Ribbono Shel Olam. And so therefore, we have an idea here that we can actually connect to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And that's the meaning of Naaseh V'Nishma. Because Naaseh V'Nishma actually means, and we'll talk about it right at the end if we have time, Naaseh V'Nishma actually means that I will do before I even understand things properly. In other words, I'm negating my opinion. My opinion counts for nothing. I'm making my opinion so small. Naaseh V'Nishma means that the Ribbono Shel Olam accepts this as the connection from the human being to the Torah, which is infinite. We will do before we understand, nullifying the I. So that's why we have this idea of connecting with the infinite. It can be done, and Tucker Yisroel managed to do it, and that's the way we are Koine Torah. And what I want to say before we actually go on to part two is a few examples of where we see actually ourselves, the Seichel Eloki, as it was called in Maral. We have examples in the physical world. And one of the examples, you know, I'll tell you, the going back to that example of when I gave the shiur in Manchester, I met somebody a few days before the shiur, and he says, your name is up on the wall, and, you know, you're going to give a shiur on Shavuos. Well, we've got dozens and dozens of people in this town who can give lovely shiurim on Shavuos. You know, you should be talking about science, he said to me. So I thought, well, I'll inject a little bit of science into the shiur. And similarly, I think we'll do a few examples where we can see that science and what it exposes tells us that the Torah is Seichel Eloki on our small level. A couple of examples to demonstrate this point. One is a disease called hemophilia. Hemophilia is a failure of the blood to clot. many kings of Europe suffered from it, and they had to have specially equipped gardens with the trees covered in cotton wool so that they wouldn't scratch themselves. A famous disease. Anyway, the Gemara talks about it, and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch in the following way. That if two sisters each have a son, and each of those sons dies, chas v'sholom, because of bris milah, then the din is that a third sister may not allow her son to have bris milah. That's the din. Now, there is no corresponding halacha with three brothers. No such halacha. That means, hopefully it will never happen, but if two brothers give their sons to bris milah and nebuch, they both are nifter, there is no such halacha that prevents the third brother from presenting his son for bris milah. The Gemara knew something. The Gemara knew, and it's confirmed, of course, by medicine, that there are some diseases where one of the genders are the carriers and the other gender are the sufferers. In the case of haemophilia, this is very much the case, where the females are the carriers. They don't suffer from haemophilia themselves, but the males are the carriers. And therefore, if two sisters have sons with this particular condition, the third sister will also carry the same gene, and therefore the son is in danger. Whereas the males are not the carriers, and therefore there is no such corresponding halacha in regard to the men. Now, the Gemara is written, the Gemara is finished 1,500 years ago. This is an amazing piece of medical information which must be no more than about 200 years old. Okay, so the Gemara knew something derived from the Torah. The other thing I want to talk about and say something briefly about is the whole matter of Shechita. Now, you know, it always comes under attack, and the reason why it comes under attack, because it looks horrible. Yeah, it looks horrible, all that blood, etc., so it doesn't look nice. And then there is an emotional reaction against it that says, you know, Shechita must be cruel because look how horrible it looks. I mean, that's not the way they put it, of course. They put it in very scientific terms, and I've seen some of the papers, indeed, very scientific, which they try to prove that there is more pain in our way than there is in other ways. We know this is not so. And one of the claims that are made is that when you do Shechita, you cut, of course, the windpipe and the food pipe, the esophagus, and the trachea, and while you're doing that, you also cut the main artery to the brain, which is the carotid artery. So that's what carries the blood up to the brain. And when you cut that, when you sever that, the blood pressure in the brain drops virtually to zero, and therefore that is equivalent to stunning. That is our argument. And therefore it's a very, very foolproof method of making sure the animal is stunned. When they stun animals, half the time it doesn't work. So although they claim in theory it's better, the fact is it doesn't work in practice, and our method of Shechita works every single time. So the blood pressure drops to zero. Now, it's a very interesting fact that animals have got another artery. That artery goes up the spine. So besides having the arteries in the neck, which are the carotids, and when that's severed, then of course there's a drop in blood pressure, but there's another artery in the spine which carries blood to the brain. In fact, it carries it to a thing called the Circle of Willis. Circle of Willis is a circular blood vessel, which was discovered by Willis many, many years ago, and it works like the M25. Basically, it goes round, and then there are all tributaries from it, and it suffuses the brain. Now, there is this other blood vessel which goes up the spine, so the critics say, you've cut the carotid artery, but there is still another vessel that takes blood to the Circle of Willis to the brain, therefore the animal's still conscious. There's some amazing fact that has, not so long ago, it's the last 7-8 years, been discovered that in bovine creatures, in bovine animals, they do not have the same arrangement of that spinal blood vessel. What happens with them is, whereas for tigers and lions and all other creatures, that blood vessel goes straight to the Circle of Willis, and they would actually remain partially conscious even if the carotids were severed. But in bovine creatures, what happens is that this same artery doubles back and connects up to the carotid as well. So if you sever the carotid, then this one is also severed, or rather, it's negated, and therefore the blood does not get to the Circle of Willis, and therefore to the brain. So in bovine creatures, so the Torah knew something that medical science has only just discovered very, very recently. Talk about Sechel Eloki, even we can see it in the right context. Okay, so far, part one. Now let's go through something else. Sheep, I believe it's the same. I believe it's the same. I call bovine creatures because that's what the paper said, but the implication is, I think, that all ruminants actually have the same arrangement. That's what my understanding of. We have a saying in Chazal, Borotzi Yetzirah, or Borotzi Torah Tavlin, that the Rabbi Shalom created the Yetzer Hara, and that's why we do Averus. But there is something that Barossi Torah Tavlin, it's a medicine, and that will correct us. Now, Rabbi Lesser asked the following question. You know, we've been talking about this infinity, it's all very nice. And what happened, Klal Yisrael managed to raise themselves through the 49 days of counting, and they arrive at Har Sinai, and there they are on the top level of Kedusha, 49th Shah of Kedusha, and so they are in a state, as Chazal say, like Odom Rishon Koidem Achet. They're in a state that mankind has never reached since Odom Rishon. So there they are, there, in the state of absolute Ruchnius. And therefore, when we talk about infinity and all that, it's very, very appropriate, because the Luchos that were given to them were the Luchos of the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Ribbono Shel Olam made the stones, the Ribbono Shel Olam wrote the writing, and it's Kuloi from the Ribbono Shel Olam. So these Luchos are Kuloi Ruchni, 100% Ruchni. Very fitting to give it to a people who are now also 100% Ruchni. Yeah? It's a marriage made in heaven, so to speak, that now these Luchos are going to be given to this people. But on the other hand, the Chachomim tell us, Barossi Yetzer Hara, Barossi Torah Tavlin. So it seems that the Torah is operating in a completely different way. In other words, the Torah is given to people who have sinned. What's going on? Is it the one or is it the other? Is it given to people who are absolutely in a state of absolute Ruchnius, absolute Kedusha, or is it given to people who have made a mistake? And the answer is, we're talking here about before the Egel and after the Egel. The Torah was given twice, or Luchos were given twice. And the first time, it's quite true, it was given to this people who are capable of infinity, as we've explained, and that was appropriate then. Then when we messed up and we did the Egel, then we needed the Torah to be given a second time, and it's given in a very, very different way. And it's given it with a different function. The function is now the following, that the Luchos themselves were very, very different. We learn on Atanis, we know Psol Lecho. The Ribbono Shel Olam says to Moshe Rabbeinu, now you are going to hew out those rocks. I want you to bring me the rock. The stones on which the Ten Commandments, on which the Aseret HaDibros are going to be written, you bring it to you. What's the significance of that? That it starts out as a piece of gush, a piece of, you know, matter, a clod of earth. You can't get more gashmias than a clod of earth. You start off with a clod of earth, and it's now going to be raised to something greater, because the Ribbono Shel Olam says, I will write on it. So now the Luchos is going to be in a completely different way, and completely different function, in that it starts out as something Gashmi, and we will raise it to something Ruchni. Whereas before, it was Kulei Ruchni, because the stones have come from HaKadosh Baruch himself. But now, even the stones are now going to be from you, humans, and I will raise it to something else. Which is a semel, which is a simile for what the Torah actually is and its function. Now we have a Torah which is given to people who have sinned. You've done the Egel, and down through the ages you will do sins in all sorts of ways and situations. But you always have the Torah to bring you up, to scratch again, to raise yourself, and to bring you up. So we have now, therefore, the two types of giving of the Torah corresponding to the two states of Klal Yisrael. So now the Torah acts as a corrective practice, a corrective item, and therefore that is the Torah, and that is our Naaseh V'Nishma still stands. We have the Shivrei Luchos, which were held in the Oron HaKodesh, in the Kodesh Kodoshim, so we were there once upon a time, and therefore, although we lost the schus of getting the Luchos Rishonos, the fact is that we've still zoicha to Luchos Shnios, and that's the Luchos we have today. I'd like to finish with a beautiful vort from Rav Shamshon Raphael Hirsch. That's the end of Rabbi Dessler's contribution. There is more to the shir, but he goes off at different tangents. And I'd like to pose to you a little problem that we have in the celebration of Shavuos. If you ask somebody, what is Shavuos celebration of? They will tell you, quite simply and glibly, every child will tell you, it is the day on which the Ribbono Shel Olam gave us the Torah. Yeah, that seems to be the Matan Torah. Zman Matan Torah Seinu. That's what Shavuos is all about, or so we would think. Let's do a little calculation, gentlemen. The Gemara says that Klal Yisrael went out of Mitzrayim on the 15th of Nisan, and that day was a Thursday. Okay, it was a Thursday, which means that the first day of their counting of the Omer would be Friday, which means that in their countings, every week would end on a Thursday. Thursday would always be end of week. Now, we come 7 weeks later, the last day of the Omer, of their Omer, if they counted the Omer in the way we do, but the counting, the 49th day would have been a Thursday. Agree? 49th would have been a Thursday, which makes the next day the 50th, which is a Friday. See? No problem. So Matan Torah was on the Friday, but the Gemara says it wasn't. The Gemara says it was on Shabbos. This is a question asked by the Magen Avraham, yeah, in Shulchan Aruch. The Magen Avraham says something very interesting. The Magen Avraham says, no, yes, it was actually given on Shabbos, it was given on the 51st day of the Omer. Maybe this is a sort of remez to Yom Tov Sheni in Golis. Listen to our Hishas. Yeah, we'll come back to that. It's a serious point. But the fact is that since the Gemara says that the Torah was given on Shabbos, it makes our numbers go a little bit screwy in that it was given on the 51st day. What's going on? Rav Hirsch explains that it's true. Matan Torah, the giving of the Torah, was actually on the 51st day on the Shabbos. But Kabbalas HaTorah was on the Friday. In other words, what is the greatness of Klal Yisrael? What is the great thing that Klal Yisrael did? They marched up these Shari Kedusha and rejected the Shari Tumah, and they got themselves to a state of being Mekablei Torah. That is the greatness of Klal Yisrael. It is the commitment that we stood there at the mountain waiting for the next day, albeit, but we were saying to our Kodesh Baruch Hu, we are ready and waiting with our Nasa V'Nishma to commit ourselves to the Torah. And that really is the greatness of Kabbalah HaTorah. So the Yom Tov that the Torah designates for us to keep on the 50th day is the Yom Tov where Klal Yisrael actually signed up to being Mekablei Torah, whereas HaKadosh Baruch Hu only gave the Torah on the next day. That is, he says, you know, not such a significant event. Of course, very significant. And maybe we can knit this together with what the Magen Avraham is saying. You know, you might think you're disadvantaged in some way by being here and having to keep 2 days Yom Tov. Especially in Eretz Yisrael, but actually in Eretz Yisrael, to keep 2 days Yom Tov is always a very strange feeling. That's what I was finding. Yeah, they're doing Melachos and you're keeping another day Yom Tov. But in fact, in the case of Shavuos, in the case of what we have here, it's very, very appropriate in a sense. The Magen Avraham said, you know, maybe that other day, the 51st day, when the Torah was actually given, is a remez to Yom Tov Sheni Shigolos. But the way Rav Hirsch has explained it, is in fact that we have 2 days of celebration. The 50th day, which we're going to have on Sunday, is tucked in the celebration of the great event. The event being that Klal Yisrael signed up to the Torah. That is it. That is really Kabbalah's Torah. The Nesina is a sort of afterthought in the way it has to happen, of course, because we need the Torah. But the fact is that's not the important event. But let's face it. In Golus, we have got 2 days. And so what we've got is a Yom Tov which celebrates Kabbalah's Torah, which is the day, the 50th day, which we actually signed up and which Rav Hirsch says is the real day of Kabbalah's Torah. But we also have the Sus of celebrating Nesinas HaTorah the next day as well, which means that we have both in this country, both in Golus. Actually, all of that is contained, and this is, I'll finish with this, contained in the words of Rabbeinu Yonah in Shah Beis Derech Shlishi. He says, and I won't read it all because we have virtually run out of time, but I'll just read you the salient bits. For Omru Ba'obas Shal Rabbi Nosson, says in Obas Rabbi Nosson, Kol Shemasov Merubim mechachmosoi, chachmosoi miskayemis. We've also got it in Pirkei Avos, haven't we? Shenema, nasa v'nishma. So he takes this Mama Chazal that says, Kol shemasov merubim mechachmosoi, chachmosoi miskayemis, and he takes that from nasa v'nishma. Biyu adobo, ki o'isha shekibel al-nafshe b'leib ne'mon. A person that commits, b'leib ne'mon, lishmoi v'lasos al-pi ha-toyra ashe yaruchu, that he'll actually act out the Torah, he'll keep the Torah according to the way he's taught, when he's taught by people who know that we're talking about, I haven't done anything yet. I've just committed myself. That's all I've done. I haven't done anything at all. He's got the schar of all the mitzvahs. He's committing himself to things he hasn't even heard about yet. Sedek lovash, v'kona z'chus ala niglois elov, v'al kol ha-ne'elam elov. You've got the z'chus of all the niglois that you're going to do, and all the ne'elam that are implied in the mitzvah that you don't do. And v'nimtso isha zeh basov merubin mechachmosei. And such a person who commits, he hasn't done anything yet, not a single mitzvah, he has got the z'chus of all the mitzvahs, and therefore he is in a state of masov merubin mechachmosei. Ki lo yodo es adova, he doesn't know a thing yet, he hasn't been taught anything. That's what we were actually doing. By making this commitment, as Rav Hirsch says, on the 50th day, that's the great event. We've therefore got the schus of the whole of the Torah, which we're only going to hear tomorrow. We've got it already today. Shekdima kabbalah samasim al nafshom lifnei hashmiya ubeinyan acha leitokin sheyu maase odom rumim b'mashi yodea. Otherwise, without this pshat, without this vort, it is impossible ever to be mekayim maase merum chamosa. Because you're always going to be told what to do, haven't you? The fact that we've been mechadish, or we, or Ben Yonis been mechadish, that the commitment itself is the asiyah, or at least chalked up as the asiyah, gives you the whole of the idea of Nasa v'Nishma, and also what we have, the difference between the Kabbalah Satorah and Nisina Satorah. I wish you all a Freilich and Yom Tov. May we all be Mekablei Torah, each in our own way.